we're back.
Hello, and welcome to the Negative World Podcast, a podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at negativeworld.org. This is episode 32, and we are recording this on Friday, May 18th, 2012. I'm your host, Steven, or as I'm known on the boards, Dr. Finkelstein. And with me today, I have...
Hi, I'm Joe, and I go by Ninsage on the boards, and today I'm going to be talking about the pros and cons of digital versus physical game releases.
And I'm David, also known as The Void on the Board, and my topic is going to be Nintendo situation regarding the casual market.
And for me, I'm going to be discussing E3 with no, you know, key thing to talk about. I just want us to discuss it a little bit, being that it is less than a month away. Boy, how time flies. So, but before all that, as usual, I want to hear what you guys have been playing. So, Joe, please tell us, what you've been using your thumbs for these days?
All right. Well, actually, kind of a random one this time around. I just had my graduation last week.
From, congrats.
Yes, thank you. And as a graduation gift, my wife gave me a Sega Dreamcast because she knew that I'd been wanting one for, well, I won't say 10 years, but
so you're gonna party like it's 1999 is what's gonna happen.
Yeah, exactly. So. Basically, I've always wanted to play Jet Grind Radio. So, my roommate, my senior year in college, had a Dreamcast and had Jet Grind Radio, and we played it basically just for one afternoon, and I fell in love with it. I thought it was amazing. So she got me the Dreamcast and Jet Grind Radio, and basically, I've spent the last week playing through that. And, my experience with that game, you know, it's funny because, first of all, it is not, or it was not as amazing as I remembered when I first started playing it. I was like, I can't believe this is the same game because I was awful with the controls. I couldn't do anything. For anyone who doesn't know, it's a game about basically these like inline skating punks, and you go around and you have to like spray paint sides of, you know, like billboards and buildings and just random objects and stuff. And you have to do so while running away from police and like rival skate gangs. And it's just goofy. But the controls are, when you first start, they're really awkward and it's really difficult. Like you jump on a certain edged surface to grind on it. But sometimes like you'll try to jump and you'll just slide right off of it, or sometimes you're trying to jump to get away from something and you end up sort of magnetically sticking to something and grinding on it, and so it can be really frustrating. But basically after the first maybe day and a half of play sessions, I finally sort of got used to the physics in the game, and I sort of, you know, figured out how to outsmart the system in the game and actually use it to my advantage. So I'm finally at a place where I am enjoying it like I was, you know, I think 8 years ago or something when I played it with my college roommate. And I just finished the single player campaign, and now I'm working on, there's all these little, I guess they're like radios, and they're kind of like hidden throughout each level. And, you know, it's like a lot of games have these sort of collectathons where, you know, it's like especially difficult to get to some of them, and you kind of have to use these like acrobatic jumps off of obstacles and things to get to them. So that's where I'm at. So I'm about halfway through collecting those, and I'm enjoying my first step back in time with my new Sega Dreamcast.
Are you a collectathon type person? Do
you know? Yeah, I typically am.
Well, let me just ask. Do you like Banjo-Kazooie?
You know, I've never played
Banjo-Kazooie. Are you effing kidding me? Really?
No.
That's an awesome game.
Never played it. Yeah, I've heard stories about that, though. how it's legendary for that sort of thing. But yeah, no, I'm typically a 100%er kind of guy. I don't know why exactly, but I find some sort of strange joy in, you know, seeing 100% at the end of the game, or, you know, the little silver star turned to gold or whatever indication they usually give. So I am enjoying it. You know, it is a bit tedious, but
Knowing that, have you ever played Super Meat Boy?
Nope.
That will stop you from ever being 100%er again.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that's just notoriously difficult on its own, but
yeah. It's a lot of fun, but it gets to a point where, in my opinion, that it's just unfun.
Yeah.
You know.
What is the collecting like in that game?
Not each level. A majority of levels have bandages, which are placed in very challenging or hidden locations.
Okay.
And you can get them and then finish the level. If you can do that in one life, then you get to save the bandage collection. And a certain amount, I think, unlocks characters and... I think that's the primary focus. But the characters all have different types of abilities, which are actually really cool when you start getting a few characters and you realize their usefulness. And some of them you need hidden characters just to get bandages to get other characters. And that mixed in with some incredibly hard bonus levels just kind of made me think, you know what, I'm done with the main game at this point.
Well, I say I'm working towards 100%, but some of them you get by getting the like highest score value on each level.
Yeah.
And I know that's just not happening. I mean, I don't think I've gotten
like literally maxing out whatever the score is.
Well, it's like they have it sort of fits into like, I think it's like six categories. So when you finish, it's almost like letter grades.
Okay.
Right. So so you'd have to get, you know, an A on every level, and I don't think I've gotten an A once. I think I've fairly routinely gotten B, but I haven't gotten A once. And I think each area has one of those little, you know, radios to collect, and it's awarded if you get the highest grade. So I have resigned myself that that's just not going to happen. So,
Well, there are other things in life to worry about, so I wouldn't be so worried either.
Yeah, it won't keep me up at night.
Like, that's the thing, too. Some people, I think, tend to try to 100% these games to the point of where, like, you're kind of missing out on other experiences. You know, there's got to be, this has to be a cutoff. I mean, I know that there's a validation and you feel good about yourself when you can actually 100% a game, but for me, there's just always a point where I'd rather just move on and play something else.
Yeah, and, you know, in this situation, I also kind of feel like basically right when I was sort of getting comfortable, like I said, with the controls and everything, I had about three stages before the game ended, you know? So I'm also kind of using this as like a excuse to like actually be, you know, enjoy the game more comfortably. And plus in this mode, there's no cops chasing you or anything, so it's more just like, you know, it's almost feels like, I guess, like a Tony Hawk game or something, because it's more just kind of like free roaming and just doing crazy tricks off of stuff and, you know, just having fun with it. So there is a balance in this game.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you're having fun with that. And what a good wife.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you been playing anything else?
No. The only other things, just I'm still working on hard mode for Kirby's Return to Dream Land, and I'm still working on... Again, 100%ing Kid Icarus Uprising. So, but those are kind of slow going. Those are kind of falling on the back burner a little bit.
Well, then, David, what about you? You been playing anything?
Yeah, well, work has been taking like much of my time these days. But I've been since last podcast, I've kept on going with Kid Icarus Uprising at a very, very sluggish pace, like one chapter a week. Well, at least I'm moving forward in that regards. And I've kept on playing Atrian at Sea for the Atrian Game Club. While I'm at it, I'd like to give my welcome to a new member who joined for the Game Club, Kuvaps, who joined after hearing our last podcast discussion on the game.
That's a 33% increase in enrollment, right?
Yeah, right. So I've been keeping on playing Atrian Odyssey and Pokemon Black also, because I have a small tournament coming up with some of my friends. So I've been well over 1,000 hours in that game, and I'm still playing it because there's more to explore and more fun to be had. But yeah, those games I've been playing mostly in the background, you know, not really for enjoyment's purpose. Maybe just Kid Icarus Uprising, yeah, but the other ones are like, if you're an Odyssey, I got to move forward because, I got a review coming up and stuff like that. So, and Pokemon Black, because I may enjoy the tournament that I will be having. But like I said just earlier, I'm pretty busy with work and stuff like that. And last week, on Friday, my girlfriend and I decided we'll be taking a day off to be with each other and pass time and stuff like that. And we played games. Cool. So we played Skylanders and Kirby Epic Yarn. My girlfriend went totally nuts for Skylanders figure and stuff like that. So she bought like maybe like 20 of those off eBay. And it's been a while since she's been, because she's pretty busy herself. So we didn't have time to play with it. So we played a bit. It's a pretty kiddie, childish game, but it's fun. You know, it's fun co-op. And we played the Kirby Epic Yarn. We started our game like 6 months ago, and we haven't touched it since because we just didn't have time. So we went back to this, and of course, it was relearning the controls and stuff like that, mostly for my girlfriend, because it's standard, pretty much the standard platformer fare. But and she's not used to that. She plays much more like Skyrim and Fallout and stuff like that, so it's not her cup of tea, let's say. But we took like 4 or 5 levels to get back into it and progress the game a little bit, and she said in the end, you know, we have to play this sooner next time, because we're gonna have to relearn once again. So that's what I've been playing, Kirby Epic Yarn and Skylander mostly. Yep.
That's so funny to hear about someone playing Skyrim and Fallout and then having to like
to basics.
Yeah, have to like up their learning curve to play Kirby's Epic Yarn, which even is a Kirby game.
It requires more coordination, even if it's very simple and fluffy and quite slow to move forward, you know?
Sure, yes.
Luckily, we're 2, but in the most tedious levels, like when the level is moving forward by itself, I got to help her a little bit to move forward, because she has difficulty like doing the car, you know, to run double tap forward. Yep. So I got to pick her up and take her, and then we make a run for it.
You know, I found the co-op in that game to be just awesome, just such a joy. It was really fun.
I think it is more so than, let's say, 4 players New Super Mario Brothers.
Yep. I was just gonna say that, because you're not. I mean, that's great, but you have to be ready for a certain amount of like just outright chaos when you enter that, whereas you can actually like work together more.
I feel like Mario, even 2-player, can be almost too hectic.
Well, it depends. You get to adjust yourself to the way the other person is playing, and there's one way in which New Super Mario Brothers beat Kirby's Epic Yarn in co-op gaming. It's that at least when the 2 players are far away from one another, you know, the screen pans out and displays both characters. It doesn't that much in Kirby Epic Yarn. And sometimes the main screen follows player 1. Sometimes it's player 2. I don't know how it defines which player to follow, but sometimes when the player fall out of the screen, he gets killed in between quotes, and you lose like almost all of your gems. And I'm playing this game, you know, to 1% hit, like Joe said. So it's to have my girlfriend playing with me, it likes it. It boosts up the difficulty level a bit.
Yeah, I can never play that with my nephew then, because he loves nothing more than to just run ahead of me in Mario, get me trapped by a wall, and then kill me. Yeah, and no matter how much he should be I'm an authority to him, and he still just ignores the hell out of me. You know, it's like, wait a sec for me, you know, or let me jump. I need like a split second. He's do, but then if I get a star or if I go down the pipe first, hey, you didn't wait for me, you know.
Yeah,
he's the main player. That's why.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, of course, he's also 4, so I think I can let it slide. But well, that's cool.
Yeah, what have you been playing, Stephen?
Let's see. Well, in the last episode I had a broken Wii, and I now have that back, and it's been getting a lot of use. The two games I've been playing right now are games that I didn't really... are not my type of game, I guess. They're not key franchises, they're not based on things that I've played a lot in the past, gameplay styles and everything. Xenoblade is the main focus, and I've never been like a hack and slash dungeon crawler type person with RPG elements. I like RPGs like Paper Mario or Chrono Trigger, but like this is just really different. But I'm loving the hell out of it. I'm addicted to it, even if I'm just not even doing anything, just quests and grinding a little bit.
How much in a week did you play it?
In a week?
Well, approximately.
At my max so far, it's probably been like, I think I fit 10 hours in a weekend or two ago.
Oh, that's not bad.
Over 2 days. Yeah, I mean, I've been moving pretty slowly through it. I don't know if this is some sort of spoiler for people. Have you guys played this game?
I have it on my shelf. I was waiting until the dissertation was well behind me, and I was going to jump into it then, but then the Dreamcast came and pushed it back a couple weeks. So
the Dreamcast bumped Xenoblade Chronicle. That's good.
You know, I try not to play favorites, you know? It's like...
Share the love.
I mean, this isn't any sort of real spoiler, but I'm at... I forget what it's even called now. I'm at an area just past what is called the Knee. And the Bionis Knee, and I mean, I'm not going to talk too much about it, because I feel the way that everybody who's talked about this game feels, for the most part, is just the beautiful expanse of vistas that you get to see, and just the fun, like, the key thing I want to say is that I'm having so much fun with this game, because it rewards you no matter what, which sounds like it could almost break the game, but you know what, if I die trying to fight a big, you know, challenging enemy, I shouldn't just lose half my coins or half of my experience or all my experience or whatever. I shouldn't really be punished, should I? I mean, I feel that this is a step forward for them to just let me keep everything that I've earned and to just come back and try again.
Right.
And it makes me want to. It doesn't get me... I'm not frustrated when I die. And it's not that I don't have worth in death, because I definitely don't want to die, especially because warp points aren't necessarily everywhere. Like, in that Knee area, I was zigzagging past all these enemies that were like 50 levels higher than me, and I was like, okay, if one of them spots me, I'm screwed. But I just realized that the level just wrapped around this really big section. I was like, okay, well, I'm probably not supposed to be here yet, but I want to be. And I died, of course, because like some bird who's level 70 saw me. But I just kept going, and it didn't make me think like, oh, you know, I'm never gonna get past this or whatever. And same thing when I battle these kind of more challenging enemies, because, you know, if you battle them 3-4 times, you'll probably end up beating them eventually. Just with that little bit of experience you'll get, or maybe you'll think of a different tactic. So it really, unlike other games, like in Pokemon, for instance, as much as I love the series, sometimes I just get so mad that I have to be in a battle right then, you know. What is the thing about random battles in general? But I love that you can see all enemies, and you can engage them almost whenever you want. And then I also found my first secret area, which was just really awesome. I got really excited for that. But yeah, just beautiful music, beautiful vistas. It's been a really great experience. I'd pretty much work and then come home and try to play Xenoblade. And then I feel really, you know, gratified for the day. The thing that my girlfriend and I have been playing together, it's Rhythm Heaven Fever, which would make our good old Guillaume probably pretty happy about it.
Because he calls it Joy on a Disc, right?
Joy on a Disc. And you know what? I thought he was full of shit at first, because from looking at it, I didn't really get it, you know? And then we recorded an episode. I think I was the host for that episode, and I ended up using Rhythm Heaven Fever music, because I think it was Plute who was talking so much about it, and he was even singing some of the songs in the episode, so I was like, okay, let's just do this. That'd be a great thing to have in our episode. And I was like, this is catchy stuff. So I was kind of turned on to it a little bit. And then I even tried a demo at GameStop, and I failed horribly. But I was still intrigued by this one. It was Air Rally that I was really addicted to, watching the YouTube video of it and everything, and hearing the song. And I bought it, and then once I really understood the game, it's a blast. And I just got my 50th medal yesterday, which is a medal on every of the main set of minigames. But I've gotten perfects on quite a few of them too, and there's a few like Love Rap that I probably will never get a perfect on. Or Love Rap too, but I've been doing pretty well with it, and I've just been loving it. And today at work, all I was doing like was in my head, random songs would pop in all week. It's been happening. Today it was Packing Pests, and a little bit of Remix 10, which is like one of my favorite songs in the whole game, and that's just really catchy stuff. It's amazing how it sticks with me. So,
well, I had a friend who brought it over. I don't honestly know if he rented it or owned it, but he brought it over. We played the first, I guess you could say, like, 3 mini games, I suppose. I thought it was good. I was very surprised at how even the first couple levels, I mean, I found them difficult. And I started percussion in 4th grade, and I've been, you know, doing music and certainly drums just since then. And I was amazed at how, like, that one where you, like, you're making those little robots, those cute little robots.
Yeah, I think that's Screwbot Factory.
Right, right. And you gotta release A or whatever when the screw gets, before it gets too tight, or, you know. I was reasonably awful at that. I mean, I was amazed. I was so surprised that I couldn't grasp it.
I will come to your defense, though, that you do see the Screwbot type game come back later in a certain fashion. And when you see it later, I feel it's easier to do. Like, it's a different tune and it's used in a different way. But that first one, that is one of my worst as well. I'm pretty good at it, but I'm not consistent with it, which is frustrating. Mm-hmm. You know, one through, I'll get, you know, all of one section and then not some of the others, and then it'll be completely flipped the next time.
Mm. Of the 3 or 4 that we played, that was probably my favorite in terms of its, setting, though. I liked those little guys. They were pretty awesome. So.
Oh, then you really should experience it some more. I mean, I think you might have some fun with your wife with it, and it is really addicting.
I got pretty decent at the very first one, eventually, the one with the golf.
Yeah.
And the golf ball and everything, so. Yeah, maybe I just need more practice.
Trust me, you do, because again, I did one that involved birds marching in the in-store demo a few weeks before I bought the game. And I was really turned off by it. I was like, you know what? This isn't really for me, I think. But Air Rally kept just being in my head, and I kept wanting to play it. And so I was like, you know what? $30, it's. I'll just do it.
Yeah, and that's true. The price is good.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. If it was any more, it probably would be worth it. I'll even say that. But no one would expect it to be, so no one would buy it.
Right, yeah. The barrier would be bigger.
Yeah, so I think $30 is a great thing. And you can probably get it for cheaper now, if depending on where you go. But I would definitely recommend it. And to everyone out there, I recommend it to them too, because I'm not normally the RPG guy in the way that Xenoblade is an RPG. I'm not normally a music rhythm game guy, but I love both of them immensely. They're some of my favorite games of this entire generation.
Cool.
And I will say one last thing about what I've been playing. Find Me 2, I hate you.
And actually, are you blocked or what? Are you stuck?
Well, I have no patience, so I just look, when I hit a room that totally F's me over, I just look up the solution, because I'm not going to sit there and waste coins, because coins are so precious and hard to get. And, but like, every other room is one of those where you need some sort of team or some sort of magical, you know, hat, which you don't.
Do you use Street Pass much?
No, that's another problem. I pretty much, in the past week, I've been making special chips. Like, it got delayed till next month, but I pre-ordered Roller Coaster Tycoon 3DS and from GameStop, and I literally paid it off in $5 increments just because I needed excuses to get street passes, and it worked. I did get some from there, but I have been admittedly cheating, as some people might have seen me ask about on the boards, changing the clock so I can earn more coins, because at work, I definitely, in my 8 hours of work, I'm getting 5,000-6,000 steps, and if I can change the clock, you know, 2-3 times in a day, I feel like I earn those coins anyway, and the block is arbitrary and stupid. So, especially now in Find Me 2, the coin amounts are so much greater for certain things. Like, if I want to actually buy a gyno, like my Reggie that everyone probably has in their 3DS, that's 7 coins right there. That's 3.5, you know, of the regular guys. And mm-hmm. he doesn't necessarily even do more damage, especially when you get to the poison room with him and you just wasted not 7, but like 25 coins because your entire team, you know, can't go through because you don't have 2 yellow shirted people. It's ridiculous.
All right, so, let me ask a question here because I may not be fully understanding how Find Me works. Can you? I knew that you could pay coins, and I thought that you could just recruit like a cat or a dog.
Yes,
that's on Find Me 1.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So when you get to this, I'm still only a couple rooms into the first one because I, you know, it's tough to street pass anyone, and I kind of don't like spending coins on it. So. But okay, so when you get to the sequel, then you can start.
Yeah, the sequel opens it up a lot more. You can team up if you have certain shirt combinations. You can recruit old street passes. Depending on their level, the coin amounts change. There's potions that you almost are required to use. There's a lot more booby trapped rooms and stuff like that. So
that sounds awesome. If you can, you know, like there's that level, I think 7 Reggie or whatever, and then. You know, the one person that apparently I've passed at my local grocery store twice that, you know, if I could pay to have them come in, yeah that would really be an advantage. So
it does help, especially if you can use them in a combo. That would definitely help you. But the thing is, though, the game frustrates me because there's too many cheap gimmicks in these rooms. Like,
well,
again,
they don't want you to finish it too quick this time.
Yeah, but it took me forever to finish Find Me 1. It
did not for me because I'm street passing my girlfriend 3 times a day, so.
Oh, lucky. Jeez. But Game Dad Grant and I did hang out. We met up and got some beers and pizza and played some Mario Kart a few weeks ago. So we're going to try to do that again and street pass again.
Cool. Will any of you two guys will be coming at the meetup this summer?
Not me. Because I need every dollar that I'm making right now. I can't spend it on a trip out there, nor do I think I can get the time off. But
I'm working on it. I'm definitely working on it. I think I probably won't know for certain until probably like the first week in July, though. So.
Well, do what you can because, you know, it sure is going to be lots of fun.
I
and
think
you're
going to
get
awesome,
your fill
yeah.
of street passes and stuff.
You know, normally I announce the "What do you think?" section of the podcast, and I'm not going to go into some whole spiel about that. But there's some things that I wanted to discuss with you guys. One of them happened just yesterday, and I don't know how many of our fan base happens to watch the show, but Community just had their season finale, and there was 3 episodes that aired last night because they were kind of behind, and the first of the 3 episodes was pretty much all. Video games, like the characters were in a video game, and they justified this under the pretense that there's a character named Pierce, played by Chevy Chase, and for him to earn his inheritance from his deceased father, he had to play this video game that his father put together, and it makes more sense in the episode, trust me. But it was actually really cool, and I wish that it was, you know, easier to talk about, you know. With visuals and everything, but obviously this is an audio podcast, but it was just really cool how they did it, and they made a lot of homages to certain things without going overboard. You know, you didn't see a lot of like Mario mushrooms and shit like that, but it felt a lot like Cave Story to me, but with, you know, Joel McHale and Allison bringing all the cast and everything.
Well, they really did draw from a bunch of different inspirational sources because... I mean, first, they, you know, when it started, there was kind of this like this almost like character selection intro thing, which I think that's the clip that's online. But
oh, really? Oh, so they don't show much of the
episode. No, the clip you only see like the first 45 seconds or something. But but that whole thing was just entirely Mega Man, in my opinion, because
I can see that.
Well, and perhaps more so than anything, was like the music. They somehow captured that in that entire like late 80s Capcom sort of you know, vibe with the music, so which was really impressive.
I think what sold the episode for me really was it felt like it actually could have been a video game.
Yeah.
Like, and that's important when you're going to suspend the disbelief in that way as they do. It's a tough sell, and I think they did a really great job.
Wouldn't it be so great if NBC put it up as like a Flash game on their website?
You know, yeah. I don't know why they haven't.
They've got the assets, clearly.
Although I'm sure that it's not actually in programmable form. I mean, I guess
that's true.
It would take a lot of effort. And honestly, I don't think NBC spends that much effort on advertising things properly.
You know, it kind of makes me sad that NBC is moving away from the Thursday night shows. Because, you know, you asked if anyone watches Community. If they don't, they should, or at the very least get the DVDs when it is inevitably canceled. I think it's next season is their last season or something like that.
I don't think that's confirmed, but I mean they're a hit with their niche, but they're definitely not a ratings bonanza. So they struggled to get a fourth season renewal, and it's only a half season anyway, which a lot of their NBC shows are right now, which is peculiar. But I was just really impressed, and all I kept seeing was Cave Story, though, the whole time. And I don't know if any other fans out there of the podcast and the show might have caught that, but partially in the animation and the music a little bit during the actual levels, not the Mega Man-esque intro, and just the level design in general.
Yeah, I could see that. I think they're literally in, like, a cave for part of it, so...
For parts. And then, obviously, there was a little bit of an homage to the Mario bridge at one point too.
Yeah, and I think when they jump it sounds a lot like the Mario sound. Mm-hmm. So
but I like how what the hell is his name, Troy, how Troy just always kept doing like flips and everything.
Oh yeah,
when he moved around.
Oh my god,
it fit his character, and it was also pretty funny to watch. But that would make a really great show or video game though, I must
say. And even when they go to that town, which I think is ripped right out of Zelda 2.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. With the woman and everything, and then
right, the woman who, like, basically becomes Abed's wife or whatever.
Yeah. No, it's for anyone who hasn't seen it and has listened to this and is confused out of their mind, it's really, really funny.
Yep.
And I managed to watch the second of the three episodes today, and it was really enjoyable. So hopefully the actual finale is great when I watch it sometime soon. But any other comments on it? I just had wanted to bring it up.
I wished at that point that the clip that IGN showed was longer, because it was very short. It was getting into the seats and sort of scan and get in the game. You saw the different sprite and cracked a few jokes. Then you see like Chevy Chase character is like, hey, which one character am I? Then it cuts right there.
That's it. Yeah,
there's
that's
a so shame. Much I feel that I missed, and I was right now after the podcast. Right now, okay, it has to end right now. I'm gonna watch them all three back to back.
We'll see. Okay, we'll see you back in an hour. You can catch the last part of the podcast.
Just joking, but I'll get to it because you certainly piqued my interest.
Yeah, I mean,
so
I'm not gonna look right now, I guess, but you might be able to catch it on NBC's site right now. They might have it streaming, so. Or Hulu, maybe.
You don't mind if I watch right now?
You know, keep it low, so we don't have interference, and then, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're on Hulu. That's how we watched them.
Okay. Then, yeah, check out Hulu, everybody. And
not available in Canada?
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe you can route your IP or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there's always some cheats, but I don't want to jump through too many hoops.
So, anyway, moving on from that. So there's a Kirby compilation disc, I guess, planned, right? You guys were talking about that before the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was said during what, the Nintendo Direct in Japan recently.
Right. Right.
Was there anything, any more details about it? Like what games are going to be included in that?
You know, unfortunately, I don't think they've released any details
no
whatsoever.
Details at all. Yeah.
So.
All right, next topic. No.
No, but we can speak what game do we expect to get on the game, because it's like a franchise that has been so, you know, there are at least, I'd say there are more games that are on portable devices that are on consoles, Plus, there are some games that can't really be ported, like some of the 3DS game, like what's the one that was near the launch of the DS. You know, you draw a rainbow stylus and stuff. And that can't be really Canvas part Curse? Of the compilation, and unless they find the compatibility stuff with the Wii Remote. I think they could do it, but I don't think they will bother with that at all. So
The thing with that one, if I'm not mistaken, is it really relied on having the second screen below, right?
Yeah.
So, because you could kind of mimic the stylus with the Wiimote pointer.
Yeah, but would they bother, or would they just say, let's wing it, that's it.
Right. So this is going to be a Wii compilation for sure?
Yeah.
So kind of the Mario one.
All-Stars.
Yeah. So this is kind of like Kirby All-Stars.
Well,
it's
going to be that caliber of a compilation. I beg to differ. I think they will, because there was so much backlash about that compilation. I didn't bought it because it was Mario All-Star. Come on. I owned that game 2 times before. I don't have it anymore, but it's not like there is no incentive for me to buy it, so they got to put some real good game on it. I figure Kirby Superstar is going to be most likely on it. I don't know if they'll maybe port the Game Boy, the old Game Boy games, but that would be cool, you know, to have Kirby Dream Land 1, 2, 3 on the Super Nintendo, and there are so many Kirby, and it's diverse too as a franchise, so I don't know what their focus is going to be, if it's going to be only the platformer Kirby and only the ones that's going to be on home console. If it's going to be that, I think it's going to be pretty lackluster to me. I won't probably buy it. But if they bring something like they did with Super Mario All-Star, you know, it was Super Mario Brothers 1, 2, 3, and the Lost Level with upped graphics, that would be nice, with the option, you know, to maybe toggle back the old graphics, old music, but be able to have upgraded graphics, upgraded music, something a fan would like, really.
Mm. I can't see them doing that, though. Like, spending the resources on remixing the graphics and upscaling them, or not upscaling in a resolution fashion, but just sharpening them up, making them look spiffier. I don't see them doing that.
No, but I don't either, but
if it's just for the platformers, though, you could probably reuse. I mean, you probably only have to do it once, right? And then it would just be the level design for
maybe
as far
then.
As the platform.
I mean, I don't know. I'm notorious on the site for not having really played any Kirby, except for the Game Boy one. And I still, you know, I never did do that. What I said, the picking up the 3D Classic that came out. Maybe now it's should wait for the compilation.
Well, yeah. It depends, you know. I don't have much faith in it. I'm hoping, because they made it a point at the investors' meeting afterward, you know, we're releasing a Kirby compilation on Wii, so it proves that Nintendo has at least a bit of faith backing it up. So, I don't know, maybe they'll put some effort on it, and maybe we'll have a nice surprise at E3 about that.
Yeah, I just see it as something that it really, you know, the All-Stars thing with Mario, they did get a lot of backlash on it, and, you know, deservedly so, I think. Mm-hmm. For me, I never had the Super NES cartridge, so for me it was kind of a new purchase. I didn't get the I never downloaded them on Virtual Console or anything, so, and I'd never played Lost Levels before. So for me it was worth it in those regards, but for a lot of Nintendo gamers, it was, you know, a little disappointing, but I think that it would probably require really so little extra effort to make something totally worthwhile with a compilation like this. And with Kirby, I know I mentioned they could, you know, reuse assets if they wanted to upscale them or whatever, upgrade them, but when you look at the library of Kirby games, that's really been Nintendo's, experimental franchise. I mean, David, maybe you mentioned how diverse they are, but especially the last couple installments, it's they're almost like their own genre. each one. Like the I know like Mass Attack is not even truly a platformer. It's like almost a puzzle game kind of thing. Well,
there's always the main series of Kirby Dream Land. You know, Kirby Dream Land 1, 2, 3, and Kirby's Return to Dream Land. And I think all the other games are like maybe like a side story per se or side kind of game. Yeah.
A very experimental franchise. They really developed into that over the years.
Yeah. I think
Blockball
makes sense.
Just came out, you know. That's another example of using the franchise for something different.
Sure. I mean,
it's
think
a good game.
If you've got a protagonist who's literally a pink circle that can change shape, then you can probably have a lot of freedom in what kind of games you design. But I will be happy as long as Kirby 64 is on the compilation, because I've never played that game. I know it's on Virtual Console. I've always like kind of meant to download it, and I just never ever did. So
same here.
Yeah,
I definitely won't oversell it to you, because I wasn't that big of a fan when I played it the little bit I did, but I do remember enjoying it, and if it was on there, it would definitely intrigue me enough to maybe get it. I don't know, I'm kind of intrigued in general, just because I really feel like there is a home for me and Kirby together, but I don't know why I haven't jumped on that bandwagon.
Hey, have any of you guys bought any of the Mega Man compilation that came back a few years ago, Mega Man X Collection and Mega Man Anniversary Collection?
I would like to.
Because both of those are very good and very well done, and it's like they're basically ROM on the discs, but there are extra unlockable and stuff like that, and some minor tweaks, you know, like in the earliest Mega Man, you know, you have to pause the game, select your power, pop out of the pause menu, then you have your new power, and that's it. That's how you change your power, the power you're using.
Right.
In the compilation, you could use like L and R, and it cycles through the power. It's a small addition, but it makes the game so much fluid and playable that way. So I think that could be. It's an example of compilation of ROMs on the disc that is well done. You know, you get unlockable remix soundtrack and stuff like that that are on the disc. And even I think it's Mega Man Anniversary Collection, there is a small, very, very short, like 15-minute documentary with Kaiji Inafune. And I watched that thing like for at least 20 times. And yeah, I'm a big Mega Man nerd. So, and it's simple, but yet I don't feel Nintendo has what it takes to make a good compilation disc.
Now, David, which platform did you play the not X, but the Mega Man Anniversary Collection on?
Well, just take a guess like that.
Well, is it GameCube?
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay, well, so, because I originally got it on GameCube, but is it not, don't they have, like, jump and shoot kind of
They're inverted.
Yeah,
you can't change that. Yeah,
I could not deal. I bought it, me and a friend got it, and we were just gonna like, you know, play through them all night, and we ended up, we just couldn't overcome. We took it right back and got the PS2 version.
Yeah, but I think they use the same exact control scheme they use for Mega Man Battle, Mega Man Network Transmission, you know, the platformer that's based on, and I played the heck of that mediocre game. So I was.
So you were already in that frame of mind then?
Yeah. My fingers were already used to that, yeah. But at least customizable controls would have been very nice, for the first one.
You did mention that it had, you know, like an interview on it, though. That's the kind of thing that, you know, when I say, like, they could really make a compilation special without a ton of effort, I mean, just throw some interviews with, like, you know, talking about the genesis of Kirby on there. So, I mean, don't you think that would, like, make a lot of fans happy?
It would for me. They have to address the thing about also Kirby shifting from white to pink, because I was a fan of the white Kirby because it was the second game I had when I was a kid, you know, for the Game Boy. The first, and I was like, well, of course it was yellow and green screen, but on the box Kirby was clearly white, and I was like, okay, he's white. And afterward, I think it was on the NES cartridge box art that it was a bit more ambiguous. You know, he was white, but he had pink highlights on it. And afterward, it completely shifted to a pink Kirby, and I was like, what the hell? What are you doing? Plus, you know, they give the option in Smash Bros. To give him the white color. So I was always picking Kirby with the white color. You know, I'm a purist at art. Not racist purist. You know what I mean? I like the original stuff. How it was. I felt it was intended like that. Maybe it was intended to be.
You know that when Miyamoto first tried to like put his thumbprint on it, that he wanted Kirby to be yellow.
I think it would have been a good color. Plus, the screen was already yellow. You know.
Well, it was kind of like a pea soup green kind of thing, but
yeah,
it was great for its day.
Yeah, you have to play it in a very well lit place.
Oh my goodness!
I played back. What was it? It was Donkey Kong 94. It's just Donkey Kong, but I played it on my old Game Boy. I have not the first one I had because I dropped it into some dishwashing water. So I had another one after, a big red one, and God, that screen is awful and small. And the console is so huge, you call that portable, I need a big wallet to carry that around.
Well, now you can get like a GameCube in the same size device.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for the time, but still, it's fun to look back at that kind of technology and say, wow, we've come that far.
Well, yeah,
in
like
the end.
My cell phone has the same hard drive capacity as my first computer, so, and that's onboard memory. So, I mean, it is amazing how things have changed. So, I wanted to bring up one more thing really quickly, guys, and then we can get into some main topic action. So, I'm sure you guys saw this on the site. Anon Mastermind had posted this like 2 weeks ago or a week ago about this the hardest platform ever, quote unquote. Cloudberry Kingdom, or Cloudberry Kingdom, according to Anon Mastermind. And I mean, you guys have seen the video for this, the trailer.
Yeah, there's another one that is more current on the website, and I watched it too with updated artwork and stuff like that.
Oh, I haven't seen that one. I've just seen the basic one. Yeah, which looks like shit. In my opinion.
Yeah, it looks like a flash game, and it's obviously randomly generated because it doesn't have any sense of pace. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to place big ball of spike there. It's only one path you can jump through. You know, it's clearly a generated game, and it doesn't have any flair.
That's one of my biggest problems, I think, with this. I mean, besides, I don't like the graphics again, but I mean, that's more of an aesthetic thing. And if it was fun, I would still want to play it. But the thing is, the randomly generated concept sounds kind of cool at the start. But I mean, the reason I play Nintendo platformers and love them so much is because they're so well crafted for this kind of experience. And I've said it before that Donkey Kong Country Returns, if you get a running start and you just kind of go for that time trial, you can pretty much flow through most of the levels because it's so well timed. You're bouncing on a character and doing this, doing that. Mm. And in this, you know, it would just be jump after jump of dodging lasers that are randomly generated to kill you. Like, it doesn't sound like I would feel like my goal would be really worth my time.
I feel like it's a generated mix of Super Meat Boy with New Super Mario Brothers, and I don't see how it could be playable with 4-player on the hardest difficulty level. I can't see it.
I mean, you can donate anything you wanted to, right? Like, it was starting with $1, and then the more you go up, you get different benefits when it comes out.
Rewards, they say.
I think Kickstarter, by the way, as a concept is really cool.
Yes, but it's getting abused right now. I think there are so much projects that are mildly interesting, and some won't take off the ground. But I like the idea of empowering the buyer. And I was like, you know, when we were campaigning for Operation Rainfall, I posted some messages on whatever the company, I think it was Nintendo, that I posted messages like, okay, just do me a nice box set, you know, I even if it costs like $150, I'll buy it. I want this game. And that's what Kickstarter is giving the power to, both the game creators and the buyers, the fan who want some new games like the Double Fine project. That's one of the game that got the most money the quickest. You know, people are backing this developer up, and I like the idea, but I don't think the game you're mentioning, Cloudberry Kingdom, whatever it is, I don't think this one will live, because I think there is like a week or a week and a half remaining, and they're like halfway of their goals. And their goal is like, I think it's pretty low, like a few thousand dollars. So there, and plus, you know, depending on how much money you give to the project, you get different rewards. And then the three highest rewards you can get that are like, I don't know, there's like somebody who give 100 receive that thing, and a guy that give like 1,000 receive that thing. Well, whatever. Those aren't filled. Nobody gave up to, sorry, my voice is giving out like right now. So there's nobody that backed that game up to $100. And with a game that, you know, they're asking for so low budget, you know, I don't feel like there is much to it. I feel they just want like, okay, the game is programmed. I watched, like I said, the second video where they explain, it's like a Kickstarter video, you know, the guy explaining, oh, I'm programming more, but now I need some guy to do the assets, because when we posted the first trailer on YouTube, people were looking. It was like I've been puking and slapping and calling it a game, you know? So it looks ugly. And so what they wanted, it's only a budget to redo the assets, music and graphics. And I don't think the game in the form it is right now will interest me, even though, you know, I raised the brow when I saw it first. I was like, that might be mildly interesting. Of course, there is still a lot further to go for me to feel invested and interested in that game. And I have tons of game right now that are fairly good that would take priority over that game. So my interest was like, well, it's not must-buy game. It's a concept game, but I don't think it's worth my money nor my time, sadly.
Yeah,
there will be more games.
Yeah, I think it's a good starting point for something else. I think there are good concepts, good merger things, and you know, like there's a co-op platforming thing you can do with Bungie style. Everyone's tied up with Bungie ropes, and you platform like that. You know, at a fairly easy level, it could be fun. But I think they should shift their randomly generated algorithm to, come on, guys, put the effort behind it and craft beautiful, fun, tricky levels.
Well, see, what I'm excited about is I'm pretty sure that with Miyamoto, you know, getting older, what Nintendo's probably doing behind closed doors is downloading his brain so that a computer will create randomly generated Miyamoto levels, you know? Imagine what that would be like. Nintendo.
AI.
Yeah. You know, actually, one last thing I want to say, and then we'll take a quick break, is we had the creator of Super Bat Puncher on our podcast many, many moons ago. Mm-hmm. And right now you can download a demo. I'm not sure how long it's been up, because I actually haven't checked in on this project in a little while, but I regret it because there's a demo you can download, and you can use like a Nestopia emulator or any emulator really to play. And I really want people to check out Super Bat Puncher. And if you know, I know a full version's coming. I don't know what the price would be or anything, but this game, since the second I saw it, looked like it would be really worth, you know, the bucks that that you might pay in the future for. So,
yeah, if I may add something about this, I learned about that game too while listening to our podcast, to NegativeWorld.org podcast with the interview with the guy.
Yeah,
and I tried the demo, and I'm keep on watching, going back to the website to see if there's any progression, and there's barely any, but it's a really good game, full of humor with, you know, I think, what it is, the name of the character, but it's like, it's always like meat puns. You meet a little bird, his name is Sirloin.
So long.
And, yeah. And the agency for which your main character is working is an anagram for beef. You know, it's the BEEF, whatever. Yeah. Mm. So there, it's a game that's made of pure creative love. You know, the guy who does that likes what he does. It's the same kind of vibe I get from the original Cave Story. You know, it's one guy doing the stuff, and I'm also very much anticipating the release on cartridge. But last time I checked, it was less than 2 weeks ago, and there were no progress on the guy's website. So I hope if he's still listening to this podcast after he done his interview, well, I hope he's moving forward, and I'm very, very hopeful for what will come from that. I will buy a game cartridge for this. It looks awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I would too.
Cool.
Yeah, so okay, so we'll take a break. When we come back, we will get into our main topics. Go into the main topics here. So, Joe, let's talk some physical digital releases.
Absolutely. So, as everyone probably knows by now, New Super Mario Bros. 2 on the 3DS will be the first of Nintendo's first-party games that will be available for full digital download on the day that it hits retail. And so, this has sparked a couple of discussions and debates, and I think for all of us, it's probably had us at least reconsider what we think about whether or not a digital download versus a physical purchase is for us. And so I just put together kind of like a little list of pros and cons. Some of them are more obvious than others, and I just wanted to, you know, get your opinions on them. So I think first and foremost, the advantages of being able to just download a digital copy of one of these games is you don't have to go to the store. For some people, that, you know, it might be a big deal depending on like if the game, maybe it will go live at midnight or something like that. And then you wouldn't even have to necessarily wait till the next day. You don't have to plan a trip into your schedule. You know, a lot of games come out on like Tuesdays and such when people might be at work. So then now you don't have to worry about getting to the store on your way home before dinner or something like that. You can just download it.
Just speculatively, you know, because we don't know that Nintendo would be doing like midnight launches or something like that. Oh, maybe you'd have to wait more, you know.
I feel like it would be a 9 Pacific, noon Eastern type deal, like everything else.
Yeah, maybe it is.
Anyway, so you know, I just made a list of all the pros and cons, but so does that first one about like not having to get off your duff and go to the store, does that factor in for either of you? Is that cool?
No,
lame?
No, for me, well, I don't want to get ahead of things. So,
sure.
But no, so for me, I mean, I go to the stores all the time. I mean, and for street passing alone, it's worth going to a GameStop. But I mean, I tend to buy things off Amazon when I can, so I don't go to a store anyway.
Mm.
Now, it's not instantaneous necessarily, but I prefer it for a reason that I won't get into yet because you're probably going to talk about it. So I'll wait.
Sure. Well, and you know, go on.
Go ahead. Okay. Well, for me, you know, I like to go to the store, to the EB Games, even if, you know, it has a bad reputation and stuff. I like to go through the used game and stuff, go to other stores and, you know, just to, it's fun for me to receive a package from Amazon. Let's say I'm a bit of a materialist right here because I like my games physical, but I can see the advantages to, I have them on my console. I won't dwell too much into it because I may stumble upon your argumentation.
That's right here, okay. You can do that. If it comes up organically, well, there's no problem.
I will jump in when the time comes. So yeah, I like to go to the store. I like to check what are the new releases. And if I only get to, you know, buy my games at midnight, the date releases, I'm not that much surrounded by gaming stuff. You know, I like the toys. I like to go. There's Game Buzz right here in Montreal. They have plushies and clothing and kind of stuff and gimmicks you may like to buy with your games physical.
Sure.
Plus, I like the, you know, the instruction manual. While they are surely on the slim side these days, if you just check, like, Kitty Care Surprising, it was like barely a
3x5 card that,
yeah, yeah, it's, I haven't even read it. I was like, okay.
It just says put in the game and play the tutorial.
Yeah,
and rest
so
every hour.
I like
hour.
to imprint myself, you know, get in the gaming mood. It's like the anticipation, you know, to get to the gaming store. And of course, it's full of big sweaty guys, but still, it's fun to be there. And it's like a mini gaming con or PAX or whatever, even if it's not that exciting, you know. You know what I mean? It's fun.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree, you know, with you.
Do you have the excitement when you're on your 3DS eShop and you're like, ooh, I'm shopping right now? It's not like that at all, you know. There's not like stuff around you.
You know, it's like you were in my room just now.
Yeah.
That's not at all what I sound like. But I can see the argument, though, even though I agree, like, I prefer the material copy, and again, we'll get into that, I'm sure, shortly, but we're thinking as gamers who are male, older, we have control over our purchases and everything. I can see this being really useful. As far as I understand, none of us have kids, so, you know, for people who have children, that's a really useful way to buy them copies of games that, A, can't be damaged, and B... Mm-hmm. They don't have to drag, you know, go to the store and take the time out when they don't have the time. They can just be like, okay, well, you know what, sift through this list and, you know, let's find one that you'd want to play or something like that, you know? So that's going to be a really big sell.
That's a great point,
yeah.
which was not on my list. That's a very good point. And you said damage, but also can't be lost. I mean...
Right.
Yeah, but you get your console stolen, and with the current Nintendo's infrastructure, you can't do much about it. You know, if your console's stolen, you're not getting your games back either.
Well, that's true.
Now, it would be interesting if they allow that, where you could send it to someone, say, for a day, and then you would be locked from playing it, which would kind of be just stupid. But, I mean, I can see them doing it where they wouldn't let you play for 24 hours, but your friend could.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to think, like, I know my wife has a Nook, and, other people that have Nooks, she can like lend them a book, and I think she doesn't lose her copy, but they only have like 2 weeks or something to access.
And that doesn't cost anything for her to lend them?
No.
No.
Wow.
No. Well, Nintendo has a mystery to, you know, like in the past you could download the demo version of a game from the original game. I don't remember which game. I think it's like Brain Training and stuff. You could send, and Meteos, I think, too. You could send the demo to a nearby friend, and it would be available on their system until they turn it off.
Yeah.
So, well, it's exactly that. It's until the guy turns off his console. So it's a bit limitative in that sense.
Yeah, that would be kind of neat. I could see that. I mean, people,
you know,
just...
a demo, maybe like they're giving on the eShop. I don't know how much it represents on our cartridge, but the full game is there. So if it's possible to give a part of the game with the same thing, like, okay, you can play 15 times. I think that's what you can play, like Rayman Origins on the 3DS right now.
Right.
It's
right,
15
30,
times.
I think
yeah, there's a demo that's 15. I don't know which one, but there's an... Oh. Maybe it's...
Maybe Canada gets less.
Yeah, no,
the exchange rate.
And stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, so maybe it could be something that could be done, but how long would it take to transfer the game? I feel the DS and 3DS system doesn't transfer much data, nor quickly do they do that. So, I don't know.
You know, I will say, though, I have street passed with someone while driving my car before.
Ooh.
So, I think that it can transfer pretty fast.
I'm street passing people when they're passing by in the bus in front of my apartment sometimes.
Really? See, that's what I'm saying. That's
awesome.
That is
pretty
cool.
Yeah, but what it is, it's like four words plus... it could be... I don't know how much big of data, but compared to, let's say, a full demo of Resident Evil, that's like 15 megs.
Right. You sure have offended my premise, but you've outed my ridiculous comment. So what else is on your list, though? I'm curious.
Well, just to close this part of it, I mean, I know people... everyone assumes that when it comes to Nintendo, if it's going to be something that has to do with, like... general advancements in technology. Like, I think no one will fault Nintendo for not being able to innovate with technology. I think they've shown that. But stuff like this with, like, an online and, like, maybe using accounts to be tied to the games. Like, what if you had to bet what Nintendo will do with these digital versions, where would you place your money? Like, what do you... Do you think they'll just be absolutely tied to the system they're downloaded on? Do you think it'll be something where you can, like, call Nintendo and they'll, you know, you ship them your 3DS and they'll transfer it or whatever? I mean, what do you think they'll, how do you think they'll handle that?
Well, I feel that Nintendo is moving forward, you know, very slowly, but toward, like, being able to get back the games you've lost, whatever, if it was through losing a game or a system failure of losing or getting your console stolen. But I think it may be coming with the next console, with Wii U, but I don't know how well it will be done, how flexible it will be, you know, because it from their side of the thing, it requires for them to be able to disable a game remotely, you know,
right?
Because they feel like they've been stolen, you know. So it's like maybe they should just let it go. Of course, it sucks, but, you know, I don't have any numbers in front of me, but what are the implications? You know, the guy who stole a console most likely won't be going out buying games. Just saying, he will going back and sell the hardware at pawn shop or whatever, or give them to his kids or whatever. And there are so many people that are using, I was about to say AR cards, but it's not what I meant. It's like, you know, the flash cards for DS and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. I forget.
So I think there is some kind of threshold where Nintendo has to let it go and take care of his consumers.
But and, I think that, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but even if they did just kind of let it go, like you're saying, I feel more people would start abusing it.
Yeah. And
you just you need a really good way to, I think enough people would start abusing it, to be honest with you, if they made it too easy. They'd have to make it easy enough to not make it that much of a hassle for someone who legitimately needs to have their something replaced, but they can't have it easy enough to where it's actually going to be worth the time. Because that's pretty much half the reason anyone pirates anything is convenience. It's not due to not wanting to pay the money necessarily or trying to screw over somebody, but it's just because, you know, when I can't get that song, like before iTunes and stuff, when I can't get that song when I want it, well, maybe it's not necessarily right, but if it's sitting right there,
right,
9 times out of 10 people are going to get in.
There needs to be a comparative advantage.
Like, look at Earthbound, you know.
To prevent it.
Many people have played Earthbound over the years, not on their Super Nintendos, but because it's just an easily downloadable ROM, and Nintendo refuses to put it on their virtual console services. And, of course, there's legal reasons that they are tied to that kind of hold them back from that. But that's an example of why people will justify ROMs in that instance, you know. So they really have to make it easy, and I think that Nintendo is going to continue, at least for the time being, to tie it to your system, but because, like, when I had my Wii repaired, I definitely had all my games still, but it was tied to my Club Nintendo account and my Wii. I hope that they just start almost mandatorily having everyone create a Club Nintendo account. And if you can't, say you don't have internet access where you live or something, well, then that's one thing. But there's a lot of benefits to doing so, so they should encourage people to do that. And I've had a Club Nintendo account since like 2003, before it was even Club Nintendo, And it would be great if I could then transfer from one 3DS to another because I have my login and some other verifiable information or something.
Well, I think it does work transferring from one 3DS to another.
Well, actually,
like they do
right.
with the DSi with the 3DS.
Yeah? I had a fat DS, so I didn't transfer shit.
Oh, I did. It wasn't as easy as it should have, but you know, it was fairly easy. Plus, just to do a roundtable, because you know, you Stephen, you said like it may be a problem to, you know, you lose your console and you had to send back your console to get it repaired. Mm-hmm. But do you have many examples around you of people around you that had much problem with the thing that with that kind of stuff? You know, like losing their games because they were selling a console or they had a broken console. Do you have many examples in any of you two guys?
There's one or two I can think of, but not even any specifics, but I've heard stories on the forums over the years of people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In a way though, that kind of makes your console more valuable in a way because, you know, I can't keep these downloadable games. So now I can charge you more. So,
makes me think of Xbox 360, you know, if there is a console that is, you know, you can't really attach yourself to that console because you know it's going to break at some point. Luckily, my girlfriend had the redesign and she didn't have much problem with it, well, at all. And she doesn't use Xbox Live either, but, you know, it's her console. It's like my GameCube. I still have my very first GameCube, you know, the purple one I had. I modded it to display a Mega Man Network transmission picture on the top instead of the Nintendo GameCube logo, and I still have it. It's fond memories, and of course, the drive doesn't work as much as it does, but, you know, it belongs to me, you know. So, I feel with downloadable game, it's something that we lose in the end, the feeling of, well, I bought a game, I have to finish it because it's a material thing. You know, it's on your pile of things to do. If I have a downloadable game, I feel I'm less compelled to finish it. I don't know why.
I can weirdly relate because
It's not real. It's not a real game.
I never beat Bitrip Fate, and I didn't really enjoy it as much as I was hoping. Mm-hmm. And I really want to go back because I don't like the idea of having an unfinished game, at least nowadays. You know, like, of course, there's a ton of NES games that I just didn't have the brain power to get through at the time or the reflexes. But nowadays, I feel kind of bad if I purchase something that I don't complete. But, I mean, it's just a downloadable game that I keep forgetting about. You know, I have Rhythm Heaven Fever, Mario Party 9, Xenoblade, and Animal Crossing City Folk sitting on my desk right now. Physical things reminding me that, oh, play these.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Bitrip Fate is an icon I don't even see because when a game's in, I instantly go there. So a game that I'm not, you know, psyched to go play, I'm not going to just think, you know, I have spare time on a Saturday afternoon, I'm going to play that game that kind of sucks. You know, game. It just doesn't really. It's not something that I found that gratifying. I know I'm not hating on it in general, just for my own taste.
Well, most likely you'll have to, if you want to play it or think about it, you'll need to turn on your console. And if you turned on your console, it's most likely because you were planning on playing a game that may be on a disc. So at that point, you're like, "Oh right, I have Bitrip Fate, but it's not the game I'm playing right now."
Right.
Now, with the rumors of what the Wii U could do in the long run, that actually might not be as big of a problem because the game could literally send you a reminder to play it because,
hey, play me!
Because I remember last year there was discussion, and maybe it was just all hypothetical, but of your controller, you know, turning on your controller, but not your console, and being able to do certain things with that. You know, what if it'd be kind of cool? Well, and then also with video calls, too, because you can do video calls with the Wii U, I believe, right?
So, yeah, well, it was concept video stuff, but I don't know if it will be implemented in what form.
So you're saying I shouldn't expect everything that Nintendo says to happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I watched back, you know, the first Wii trailer we had, you know, when it was like the Wii remote coming out of water or something like that, you know. I watched a concept trailer and there was like some stuff, you know, okay, that's Mario Party, that's Red Steel. But many of the promises that trailer gave didn't came up to fruition.
Yeah, you guys mentioned, you know, the sort of the value of the games if they're purely digital. Do you guys think that they might ever possibly be cheaper than the physical copy, well, because, you know, they're saving on production cost, and maybe if they want to sort of entice people to go digital.
I don't think Nintendo would. Or at least not enough to warrant changing me.
There's a problem entailed with that, you know, with the 3DS. If you buy, of course, there's the convenience of playing like New Super Mario Bros. 2 on your 3DS. It's always there. You pop in, pop out of a game. It's a game that suits that kind of media well.
Well, my one problem with that is I don't think that it will be possible for them to charge. They're gonna charge the same currently, as far as we know. But the only way that that would be worth, or that would make any sense to me, is if they actually had it so I could, you know, transfer my game, or if it had the same kind of mobility and functionality that the actual hard copy does, then I can see that as being a parallel. But if it's locked down, like, then
you
that
know
doesn't,
it will.
Yeah, then
likely,
that's not,
you know,
that's not the same value. And
right.
I'm not just buying a box, but I'm buying choice and freedom.
Mm-hmm. You're buying freedom. That's
and
good.
I need to have the American and Canadian anthems behind that.
I got back the point I wanted to make just earlier, you know, when you were speaking. So the problem is we need to buy additional SD cards. I don't know. It's an additional cost. Nintendo will most likely sell the downloadable game the same price as the cartridge game. So I think it's only a matter of preference at that point, but the extra cost of the SD card and having to manage, you know, cleaning the fridge, just like in the olden Wii years, you know, it was 512 megs on the console, you know, but the games are much bigger on the 3DS. I don't know how big will be New Super Mario Brothers 2, but, you know, if you download a game like Resident Evil Revelation, it's gonna take much space on your SD card, and I know many of the game, I have a 4 gig SD card, and it's almost full right now, and I don't download trailers, and I don't download demos anymore, because I don't have much space, and I don't want to be bothered with having to clean up the memory and stuff, which is a process that is tedious at best. You know, it's easier than on the Wii, of course, but it's not easy. You have to memory management.
I want a Nintendo fridge with a 3DS dock in it, so I can get one of these beers and I can get my 3DS data.
And you put your old games, the one you're not playing anymore,
in the freezer.
Well, what is it, Mad Cats or Nyko? I mean, they'll make anything, right? So
yeah,
you just got to be patient, man.
The Nyko mini fridge, $99.99.
So it sounds like we got a lot of pessimism about the digital download, and I got to agree. I think for me, I always feel like it's an extended rental, a digital copy. You know, you have it for the lifespan of that system or that service, and to me that, you know, if it's going to be anything near the normal retail price, then that's just a total rip-off.
It's
might be too strong, but yeah. So the one last possible positive I'll throw out there is, for me, I know I'm super excited that I finally was able to order the 3DS 18 game case that went back on Club Nintendo yesterday. And I've been waiting forever, and part of that is because I, now that I've got a couple of 3DS games, I'm finding it, you know, kind of a pain to, you know, bring them around if I'm going to be, you know, actually using the system portably. So how much of an advantage do you guys think, you know, having the digital games provides? And, you know, you don't have to worry about carrying all the cards around. You know, they're all there all the time.
Well, I like not having a disc or a card for Colors 3D or Pushmo and stuff like that. That is very, very good. I think that I would be okay with the next Picross game, if they give us one, would be a digital download only. I would love to just download that son of a bitch right now. I would do it yesterday.
Well, I was just going to say that, so it sounds like it's coming down for you to, like, you know, the play style of the game. If it's the kind of thing where you would likely be picking it up for 5 or 10 minutes, you know, constantly throughout the week, versus, you know, Resident Evil or something where you probably just sit down and play for an hour or two and then, you know.
Playstyle does have a factor of it. But in general, you know, I want to own my content, and I don't feel like I really own it if it's just digital.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think most of our fear of that digital future in which Nintendo is just taking its first step is maybe we're a bit old-fashioned. Plus, we know Nintendo very well in that they won't make it very easy for us in any ways. And there are some things that I like. You know, when I buy a game, there are games like special editions and stuff. I like those when they feature like a statue or art book or stuff like that. But if you get digital download extra, like, oh, buy it at GameStop and you get that free gun, whatever it is, I don't adhere to that kind of vision. You know, it's not, give me more stuff. I need stuff.
Yeah, don't try to like hold, you know,
content, you know, unlockable. You just get a key to unlock a place.
150 kilobytes of an unlock code. Don't hold that over our head, you know. So.
All right, well, we'll move on to.
I'm done. We are all done, I think.
Oh, but David, you're just starting, sir. Because let's hear your topic.
So yeah, my topic. So I wanted to talk about Nintendo's situation regarding the casual market, because even though Nintendo's been looked on as the casual gamer console maker, you know, they make the 3DS with lots of software for the casual market, and they brought a slew of new consumers to the gaming market. I feel the casual market momentum shifted in the recent months / years to Kinect and mostly mobile devices. I wanted to address the fact that Nintendo is reacting to this. And when the 3DS first came about, I was like, okay, so Nintendo may be going back after the casual market they seemingly lost on the DS. But 1 year in the console lifetime, I feel like they not dropped the ball, you know, but they kind of let it go a bit. And they maybe they aren't willing to go back to get those consumers. And I wondered what your opinion on this point, you know, do you feel that the casual gamer is now playing Angry Birds instead of doing some Wii Fit?
Well, I don't know. See, it's hard for me to really talk about this from an experience point of view, because I'm playing both.
I'm playing neither. At some point, casual gamers, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I love Wii Fit. I actually lost weight on Wii Fit. I stepped on a scale recently. I need to continue to play Wii Fit. And the winter definitely was not kind, but Angry Birds, whenever I remember that I have it on my phone, it's certainly, you know, is a fun game. And like my nephew, who I mentioned before, he goes crazy for Mario, and he goes crazy for Wario Land Shake It and stuff like that, but he also goes crazy when my phone's out and he's like, Angry Birds, I'm getting a new phone and I'm going to give him this one loaded with four different Angry Birds types, and he's going to go crazy for it. But I mean, and as he grows up, I know that he's going to love playing Angry Birds, but he's also going to want these other experiences that he's been playing with me and his father. And I really think that there is a market for, or a majority of the market is open to both. If you're a true gamer, I think the whole hardcore gamer thing is bullshit. Like, if a true gamer or whatever, you know, label you want to attach to it, is someone who will not, like, I know I jump around on these and half sentences and all that, but like during the wars between N64 and PlayStation or GameCube and PlayStation 2, people would just shit on each other, you know, left and right, because I'm a true gamer. I play Sony PlayStation or blah, blah, blah. A true gamer plays everything. They play what they like. They don't give a shit. You know, it's like when you go to college after dealing with high school and you realize that nobody gives a damn what you're into. You can just be yourself. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so a true gamer will be whatever they want to be and whatever they are. And so there is a casual market and a hardcore market, quote-unquote, in terms of sales. Like, you know, my mother, if she was out to buy a game for herself, I don't think she would go for Xenoblade.
You'd be surprised.
But right, exactly. You know, I mean, it can be surprising sometimes. I wouldn't consider my girlfriend to be a hardcore gamer, but she is actually very intrigued by Xenoblade just from hearing me talk about it. So I think that people just, it's just easier, just like with stereotypes and everything, it's just easier to lump people into a label so they can be discussed.
I think you're doing, well, regarding my topic, I think you're doing the mistake of thinking of yourself as both an hardcore gamer and a casual gamer, something I think we all are at some point, but there are people who are just casual gamers. And I'm thinking right now about one of my friends, his sister, because it wasn't my friend's birthday, it was like 2 weeks ago, and his sister is big into fitness and stuff like that, and she was big, of course, into Kinect and moving and stuff like that, but she's not a gamer at all. She plays Zumba fitness and Just Dance, and that's it. And you could argue that these are large appeal market games, but they sure are not hardcore games. Plus, she doesn't play any hardcore game either.
To me, I see that as her being hardcore into that genre. Like,
I'm totally
like a pacifist with like 90% of the arguments we've ever had on this podcast. I'm probably like one of the most boring people to listen to because I'm always so like, everybody wins, everyone, you know, like nobody's wrong. But
I beg to differ. You're very interesting because you have diverging opinions.
Yeah, but I totally see what you're saying. And there is a group of people who only play a certain, like a type of game that aims at a certain set of skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Just Dance, you don't have to be able to think like you do with a strategy RPG to play Just Dance, you know? Mm-hmm. And not to slack
you
on.
You have barely anything to do to play Just Dance.
Right.
on my experience, you know.
And I'll knock the Wii version. You actually have even less to do if you're playing the Wii version because it doesn't actually match your movements. It just, you know, it's, I mean, you could put it on your dog, tape it to your dog with duct tape, and you'd do just as well. But no, you're right. There is a certain group of people who play just those type of games, like Zynga games and stuff like that. And I don't, I mean, I don't have any real data to back this up, but I personally feel that it's not going, I don't think Angry Birds and Words with Friends is going to take away the appeal of something like, I'm thinking Wii Fit now, which is a whole different, that's an exercise genre, which is its own thing. But
relating to my topic, do you see any titles that may, you know, suit that casual market on the 3DS or in the recent weeks for Wii? There's nothing, you know, we heard about the next Brain Age. There was Nintendogs that, as far as I can tell, bombed. And I feel Nintendo lost a part of the casual market and that they do not take the time to tailor to it as much as they used to in the past.
I think, not to, again, capitalize on the conversation, but Pushmo, to me, is a casual game.
You're right. You're totally right. And it's a downloadable game, and I think it suits the format quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
There
are a few quality titles, that's a thing, and Pushmo sold pretty well, but I think it appealed mostly to the casual aspect of hardcore gamers, because who bought the 3DS? I mean, mostly Nintendo enthusiasts.
Plus,
and
the community of level creators tend to be people who recreate Mega Man sprites and stuff like that. Even, like, I would create a few new works of art, but I also love to just take sprites and do that. So, like, people who have a history with Nintendo and video games who know that you're not going to find those or other people creating levels necessarily on such a scale. So, the community aspect definitely kind of was capitalized by the quote-unquote hardcore of the casual. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Well,
so,
see, now, this is why, I've always disliked the terms hardcore and casual, and this is why even in the
like
midst
the term
of this conversation,
hard casual.
I mean, oh my god. Well, and this is exactly what I'm getting at. I mean, we're talking about like the casual segment of the hardcore audience or whatever.
The
I mean,
hardcore faction of the
I mean, I know you can technically spell it out and then give it meaning, but
it's kind of contextual,
right, but it's like if you take those terms a step back from what they've come to mean in video game culture, it's like every other hobby on the planet has people who are, you know, the hardcore, like literally the ones who are the most active and involved and passionate, whatever. And then there's people on the periphery who are less involved. And like, really, it doesn't need to go any further than that, because that encapsulates, you know, all different play styles and what people want to play. So if you're playing Angry Birds, you know, 20 hours a day or something, well, then congratulations. You're a hardcore gamer. You probably need some sort of intervention or something. But
Well, it arcs back to what is the definition of hardcore.
Right.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I'm thinking right now about, like, readers. Like, I'm a casual reader, you know. I've been reading the Hunger Games trilogy, and lately I've been really slacking off on the third book. But there are people who read a book a week. Like, and I would call them hardcore readers. But it's weird how saying a hardcore reader and a casual reader don't have the same divide that hardcore,
I think,
gamer does.
Hardcore is not about doing the action, because I'm not a hardcore eater, because I eat three times a day, you know? A guy, yep, who does restaurant reviews, who take a deep interest in the thing that he does, is an hardcore, whatever he does, you know? But if I
that's not what it means.
No, that's not by doing it. The frequency of reading is not about, it's about something
it's
you
about
do.
It's about your passion level, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about the passion, yeah.
You know, I just so happen to have done my PhD dissertation on defining hardcore in video game culture. Oh, I kid you not.
Snap.
Yeah, and, well, the thing of it was, you know, the conclusion is simply that it's just a perception, and it's just something that you attribute to, you know, games and or gamers. I mean, obviously even that definition is not, you know, like the be all end all or anything like that, but that's really the most like tangible takeaway you can get. It's just, you know, if you see a certain person, you know, a lot of stereotypes, the typical teenager who's just playing Gears of War or whatever. Well, he can just be instantly identified as quote unquote hardcore. And the same thing with those games. But, you know, something like Wii Fit or whatever, or, you know, even Mario games, for goodness sake, because they're not violent. They don't, you know,
they're
reinforcing this,
pretty
like,
much too, on the challenge,
yeah,
side.
So this might be kind of outlandish of an idea, but in a way, I feel like the terms hardcore and casual were, I mean, they probably existed at the time when the Wii started coming out and everything, but I feel like they were capitalized on by media to, not like there's a conspiracy to hate on Wii lovers and Nintendo fans, but like, I feel like its usage, at least in the beginning, was more to, like, bitch slap Nintendo fans without actually pushing away your demographic. Like, oh, we want...
Nail on the head, my
like,
man.
Like, we want Nintendo fans to come to IGN, but we also think they suck balls. So we'll call them casual gamers, and then that way we can say, like, oh, the hardcore market's awesome. Casual's got some problems. And by casual, they just mean fun, friendly, family-friendly games, like Nintendo games, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm. There was this other... if there was more time, there would have been this last aspect to my dissertation, which will probably be a future study, and that was looking at gaming media and their use of the terms, because there's this thing in communication theory called dependency theory, and what it says is that, you know, in times of unrest, social unrest, people will rely more on the media, which mm-hmm. makes sense. You know, you want to find out what's going on. So I think that what they did exactly with this hardcore casual thing was they sort of like mined this insecurity among their audience of, you know, well, what are you? Like, which one are you based on what you play? Are you cool? Are you one of us? Are you one of the hardcore gamers? Or are you like one of those, you know, unwashed masses playing,
right,
playing that silly white little box?
They want to advertise towards, so they want to cater their advertising towards a certain demographic and certain,
yep,
people. So now that there was a split in terms of focus, you know, now they have to, you know, use these terms so ridiculously in such quantity, so that way they can kind of, yeah, try to latch on and keep these people in their,
yep,
web.
basically, it just makes their job easier from nearly every perspective. And, you know, unfortunately, even as time has gone on and this generation has gone on, and I think a lot of people kind of got sick of the terms and, you know, a lot of people kind of came to the realization that they're pretty meaningless. Unfortunately, there was still no incentive for the media to really, you know, they're not harping on it like they used to, but they're not admitting how silly it was either. I mean, they'll still bring it up now and then, and they'll still sort of rely on it like a crutch now and then.
About that, what do you feel about Nintendo's E3 statement of last year about saying that with the Wii U, they will try to recapture the hardcore gaming market?
I feel like they don't help the situation by referencing it, but they kind of have to because it's created.
But
now,
what does it mean on a strategy standpoint? Most likely it's about the image.
Yeah, I mean, because they are, but Nintendo, that's the Nintendo being a media, you know, provider and they're playing a role in the media as well. So they kind of have to do that, which is kind of unfortunate.
You know, I've tried to think about this any number of ways. And unfortunately for Nintendo, I think the only way they could possibly do it, save for like, you know, letting things gradually change over the next like two console generations, they'd have to pretty much start like a subsidiary of Nintendo and call it something else entirely and like have that make the next console, you know? Because like if you look at especially Microsoft, it's kind of brilliant how they're having their cake and eating it too, because they, you know, called it the Kinect and whatever, right? And they even sort of position the games as Kinect games. So they're not necessarily like Xbox 360 games.
They're not lowering the, they're not putting a stick in their brand.
I feel like that was kind of by accident, but you're right. It did happen. And so it doesn't, one brand doesn't hurt the other brand, even if all they're doing is just trying to make sure you know that you need this peripheral.
Because if you see, you know, 360 gamers, none of them are worried about the connotations that come with Kinect and the success that it has had, you know?
And games are not for Kinect when they're hardcore gamer, when they're quote hardcore. It's like they're Kinect compatible, you know, and you can yell Fruz Roda and whatever and stuff like that. You know, it's some extra stuff if you own the thing, but it's not a Kinect game per se. And I think it's a very brilliant thing they did right there, branding wise.
But Nintendo, their whole thing for a long time, even before the Wii, has been, you know, more or less a family-friendly kind of, I don't know how to say it. They enjoy the fact that people know, families know, if you buy a game with Mario in it, you know, there's not going to be objectionable content, you know, and it's going to be something, you know, fun that the whole family can play, and you're not, you know, they don't alienate any part of their audience, but at the same time, it doesn't get them any street cred, you know, it doesn't get them any, you know, that hardcore image that segment of the audience covets. So it's like, you know, what are they going to do? Are they going to, yeah, there's that rumor that Go Nintendo had the other day about like Eminem being in some sort of promotional video for a Wii U game. I don't know if any of you saw that. Now,
no.
Since it came out, I'm pretty sure they're kind of saying it's you know, totally baseless. But just think about, you know, is that the kind of thing? Is that their best option? You know, to like, let's bring in this, you know, offensive rap star or something and have him, you know, talk about the Wii U, and, you know, maybe that'll convince. I mean, something like that is going to be so transparent that no one's going to buy into that.
Well, no one. No
feel
one,
free to disagree.
No one of our age, rightfully so, but kids. Anyone under 20, really, they are impressionable, you know?
Yeah.
I think the whole Joel McHale thing was, one, a really awesome ad for the 3DS. Like,
oh, definitely.
It was just hilarious and fun to watch. But I'm also a fan of Joel McHale.
Community? What?
Yeah, exactly. And, or The Soup, even. Let's plug that show, too.
Joel McHale podcast.
But, and, I mean, for me, that actually did make me like Nintendo just a little bit more for like having the gall to do something like that. And if it was someone who I didn't care for, if they had 50 Cent doing a commercial, I would have been like, I guess it wouldn't have necessarily negatively hurt me with Nintendo, but I just would have been unimpressed and disinterested.
Yeah. Something I would expect more from Sony or something like that.
So I don't think anyone's going to say, oh, M&M plays 3DS 2? Shit, like, you know. And have
I was
kind
wrong
of...
about Nintendo. They're totally hardcore.
Yeah, you know. And then a bunch of teenagers are going to go out to the Walmart or the GameStop after school and all street pass all day. Like, no.
Over the thing that, you know, the image of the rapper sticks to the device, I think it gives some spotlight, some discussion about the device. You know, it's sure is a blatant and evident commercial scheme, you know, to plug a rapper with a device and people will see right through it, but we are talking about it right now. So sure. I think at some point it's working, even if we're like, oh, it's such a commercial scheme.
That's what the Joel McHale thing was all doing. It was highlighting the fact that this is obviously a commercial, you know, which mm-hmm. sure is the best way to make your commercial effective, is to self-reference and self-deprecate.
Yeah. Just to
get at the the heart of your topic about, you know, Nintendo mm-hmm. with the casual market, just my two cents is that I think that they might have some trouble, you know, getting the amount of people that made the Wii a success, getting them to jump on board with the Wii U. But mm-hmm. for me, I see it as that consumer comparing the what the Wii can do right now for them versus, you know, why they should have to buy the Wii U. I personally don't think it's going to be them looking at their, you know, iPhone and looking at Angry Birds and saying, well, if I have Angry Birds, why do I need a Wii U? You know,
yeah.
That to me is two different pies that, you know, if someone takes a bite out of one, that, you know, yeah. it's unrelated.
But you can't deny that the exercising and movement stuff has shifted sure. from Nintendo to the Xbox, and the Xbox Kinect, you know, it's easier between quotes because you don't have to have any device. You just have to have your buddy, and it's a better, well, I don't think it is, but people think it is a better party system game just because, okay, everybody gets up in front of the screen and you just dance and that's it. And I beg to differ, it's not a better gaming device, but it sure is a better divertissement, entertaining device. Right. It's entertaining, but it's not a game to me, you know.
Playing
solitaire or whatever. Yeah.
I were to bet, I think that Nintendo's strategy for getting those, you know, quote unquote casual gamers back will look nothing like its strategy for the Wii, other than, you know, it'll still be all ages, family friendly, cute and cuddly. They'll find some, I don't think it'll be based purely on, you know, like fitness games and get up off the couch like it was before. I'm sure they'll still have that somewhat,
mm-hmm.
but I think they will invent something that we probably aren't even seeing yet with this tablet thing. Whether or not it will succeed, we don't know, but I bet that that's where they're kind of like putting their...
I know what you mean. I'm totally backing you on this because I think their hope of keeping on doing the same thing with the U and with the Wii, sorry about that, dropped when we stopped hearing stuff about the vitality sensor.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, I think it died right there. I think they're... Yep. going somewhere else where it's more entertaining, friendly, and party games, and not like precise and
you
stuff.
You mean you're not fascinated by your own pulse?
Oh my goodness. Them not releasing that might go down as one of the smartest moves Nintendo's made.
See, here's how much of a, like a, like I was saying before, how I can appreciate everything to some degree, because I was actually like, how can this be used? I was like, go for it, Nintendo. Let's try it. Like, maybe I'll want to buy this thing. But I also bought an e-reader, so I've been tricked before.
Well, you know, I will say, obviously, part of the reason we're all here is because it's like, if any company was going to make it cool, I'd let Nintendo take a crack at it, right? But who knows?
Yeah, but with no third-party support and with or iffy third-party support, you know, it's only a thing like I feel only Nintendo would know what to do best with it. And in that case, it would fall in the gimmick box, you know, something that wouldn't be needed and would sell only if the people would buy into the idea of the Vitalis sensor. So it all died by itself. You know, there was nothing to feed the thing to make it interesting, I feel.
So, you know, I bet this is a pretty good segue into what's going to happen at E3, don't you think?
Vitality sensor? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Wouldn't that be just bullshit if that really was like a major thing?
Oh my god.
Like, or the Nintendo. Yeah,
they removed the tablet and instead they reinstalled it.
They're going to announce the Wii U can read your eye movements and not to like actually play, but just to see if you're frantic. or something. But yeah, so I guess we'll jump into my topic then, which was E3 2012. And I, you know, the main thing I wanted to discuss with you guys about this was primarily your like top three hopes. I wanted to hear what you guys are wishful thinking about this, because E3 is today's the 18th. It's two weeks away. Two and a half, yeah.
Crazy.
And I forgot who I was talking to about this, but it's weird because it feels like it just happened. You know, like I can always remember the moment after E3 ends where I'm like, oh, I have to wait another 361 days or whatever, you know, and then
three or more.
And then here it is, you know, mm-hmm. And of course, I'm not going to it, but I think some of us at Negative World are. So anyone listening,
Guillaume is going.
Yes, Guillaume definitely is. And I'm sure he's going to have a lot of impressions and pictures. Like, I believe he did last year. He went last year, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a lot of good stuff to look forward to on our site.
Well, you know, first let me say, obviously, I'm sure whatever makes us the most happy will likely be something that we have no knowledge of right now. But as far as things that I could guess at, well, Kid Icarus is already out, so that's off the list. That had been top of my list for like the last probably 3 or 4 years, you know, before its announcement. But on my list this year, I gotta say, probably number one is I hope they change the name of the Wii U. I know it's like something where a lot of people are like, who friggin' cares what it's called? But not only have I felt, you know, we talked about the hardcore casual divide and everything. When I go into the game stores, which I like to do, as David said, you know, I like to go talk shop with those guys and stuff. I feel like even over the past couple of years, when I say Wii, as soon as it comes out of my mouth, it's the kind of name that just automatically puts up the, you know, the defenses for people, because it's just something that sounds so ridiculous that they can't get behind it. Now, again, for me, I have easily overcome this. I'm not talking about for myself, but it would be nice if for the next 5 years I could go into a game store and reference my favorite console and not have to worry about them making dick jokes or something like that, you know?
Yeah, it's not the problem I have in French.
The Nintendo schlong.
Right. And then beyond that, this is the big reason why I think maybe they might change the name, is the whole market confusion thing. Because
that's a much more viable reason.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, people have said that Nintendo feels there was some issues regarding, you know, naming the 3DS what it is, because people just thought it was another DS redesign. And I gotta say, I feel awful for Nintendo when I go into the store and the 3DS games are on the same shelf as the DS games, just intermixed, like alphabetical order.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a major failure on Nintendo's part, really, if, you know, because they were unable to prevent that kind of confusion, which I can't even believe actually happens. I mean, I don't know how.
Yeah, I mean, because then you'd think that PlayStation 1 and 2 should get mixed up, more or less. I mean, it's very similar, is it not? I mean, yeah, it's not DS3 or DS2, but having the numbers on the other side.
I think,
well,
yes.
For my experience, they're not mixed up, they're separated, but they surely are side by side. And I find that's convenient because, you know, you can play DS and 3DS games on the 3DS, yeah. but the games aren't intertwined, you know, 3DS, DS right. on the same row. And I feel if I would see that in a store, I would bitch slap the manager or something. I don't know.
Yep. I don't know if it's
I'm going
just...
to look for that on the... on the news sites. Montreal man bitch slaps store owner.
So yeah, you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes when people have a critique, you know, it's nice if you can provide like a solution. I have no idea what would make a good name. You know, I have no idea what they should
I heard call. So much on many podcasts like there's something like a fellowship to Super Nintendo.
Right. I'm going with Super Wii. I deal with six more years of dick jokes for Super Wii.
Well, I feel adding the word Nintendo in the console would be wrong. In the past, I didn't felt so, but right now I feel...
They should go with Sega.
Super
just
Sega.
Total, just totally...
Super
totally
Sega Wii.
Sega.
Yeah.
Dreamcast 2, why not?
We'll spell it S-A-Y-G-A, and then there's no copyright issue, and it's just Super Sega Wii. So, okay, so since we have limited time, I want to hear more on your list. So the name change, that would be nice. And you know what, I would concur. I'd be fine with it either way, but your points are valid in my eyes. I would go with that, too.
Next is some announcement. I doubt they would even waste their stage time to announce it there, but Pandora's Tower coming to North America and validating the story that I tried to break a couple weeks ago it was in fact.
In other words, I would like to not look like a jackass after.
Yeah, well, you know, that'd be a happy byproduct, but also playing. Playing a cool game, I'd be really excited about that. And also, you know, that would complete the Operation Rainfall trifecta, and it would really give that whole movement kind of justification.
And
you know,
also at the same time shut their mouths. Like, anyone who hates that movement could say like, okay, see, you won and you got it. Like Nintendo, it doesn't suck, or you know.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Nintendo would be smart to do that from an image standpoint. I don't know what the logistics are of how much money it would cost and how much money it would make, but
well, are you aware of what's going on with Operation Rainfall right now regarding Pandora's Tower? I briefly talked about it on the previous podcast. I think they're pitching the game to a few publishers. That's what they are doing right now.
To Sega?
No, not Sega, but a few were like Exceed and stuff like that. Like a few companies that had experience publishing games on Nintendo platforms. And what they're doing a nice like box set thing with artworks and printout of the various petitions and stuff, and with the European copy of the games and stuff like that. You know?
Can you like really quickly explain to me what really does that role mean? I mean, so the game's developed, right? And that there's developers and publishers. And pardon the fireworks going off, by the way. I'm not going to edit those booms out. That's just what they are. But so there's developers and then there's publishers. And I understand the publisher would handle, like, advertising and probably packaging and stuff like that. But is that really it? Is it more just getting the game out the door and off the computer?
I think there's stuff like paying for a rating from the SRB and distribution across the different territories.
So it's kind of like a producer of a movie. Like,
yeah, exactly. You don't have to praise a publisher unless it's like Exceed who's doing games you want and they're publishing
it. Right, because then it will encourage them, or same thing with a movie producer, it'll encourage them to take on projects that appeal to you.
Yeah, I mean, Exceed has basically made a name for themselves by publishing the games that otherwise wouldn't get published, right? I mean, that's kind
They're
of been their
people what they want.
Claim to fame. Yeah, exactly. And there's so much, you know, positive, like, social investment because of that for them. Mm-hmm. So.
So, okay. So let's, I'm probably cutting you guys off, but yeah, let's keep moving.
No problem. The only other one we already discussed, and that was somehow Nintendo manages to, win back hardcore gamers without, you know, selling their soul in the process.
They're doing that with third-party support right now.
And we know that we sold our souls by buying Wii's. Oh!
Oh, snap.
All right, so then, David, you got anything?
Yeah, I'm going to get, like, bullet points pretty much because we want to get through this. First, I would like to Microsoft die in a fire. No, it's a joke.
Okay, no. Yeah. If there's any fires at E3, you know who's we're going to be looking at.
I would like from Nintendo that they will unveil their plans to transfer downloaded games from the Wii to the Wii U. I would like to know how, and this ties in from a topic we had previously, like earlier. And I would like to be able to play my Virtual Console game on the tablet screen. That is one thing. I feel it would be, you know, I have a really big TV, but sometimes when my girlfriend's working beside me or playing DS or stuff, I would like to play some Phantasy Star on the tablet screen of the Wii U. That would be nice. So that's one thing. Next, Nintendo unveils connectivity between the Wii U and the 3DS. We know it's coming. I have my hopes pretty high and ready to be crushed. You know, I want something great to be done. Like I mentioned earlier, they had some sort of connectivity between the Wii and the 3DS with the transfer of Miis and stuff like that. So that's a thing. Step up your game for the next console. I think Nintendo's pretty much capable of doing something great with that. Next is something you most likely aren't expecting. It's Namco Bandai announces Tales of Graces F or Tales of Zillia that will be released for Wii U. Or Monolith Softs announce a follow-up to either Xenoblade Chronicles or Baden Kaitos. That's it. These are my 3 points. Okay. So what about you, Stephen?
Okay, yeah, mine should go really quickly too, and then I guess we can go into other things. But number one thing, and I'm sure no one's going to be surprised by this, but I want an Animal Crossing release date, damn it. Because I'm so excited for the new one. I think that it's going to be a fresh take on the series again. And as much as I love like my GameCube one, it really does fit really well with the handheld. And I've been carrying my 3DS with me, even at work, to get coins and stuff. And it would be cool to be able to just pop in there and do things throughout the day, as well as you know, sitting at home. So I'm really psyched for that game. I'm glad that it has a, you know, a soft release date. We know it's going to be coming out this year and later this year in the fall season, but that's not good enough. I want a countdown clock on Facebook. Which, no, I don't. But
if you share a link to Nintendo's page of Animal Crossing, after a few thousand, it unveils a countdown clock and stuff. I think they did that with a game. I don't remember which one.
Interesting.
No, that's a gag.
Okay, I was going to say, that's fancy Nintendo.
Hopes dashed.
Yeah, wow, I'm going to cry tonight. So, this one, okay, I technically have 4 things, because this is kind of an obvious one, so I don't think it counts, but, like, I hope that they actually have, like, a lot of hands-on playable stuff.
Like, stuff actually up and running and not
people,
just trailers and such.
Like, let's grow up. Come on, we already have the unveiling. let's get our hands on the actual.
Are you expecting more from the first party or third party? Because I feel right now what we see, it's mostly third party, and I feel most of these games will most likely have a demo on the floor. But I don't know what Nintendo has
in store
either.
My guess is that third parties will be more likely to have demos, while first parties will be shown in greater numbers now, because Nintendo's going to be slowly showing their hand, and they have to if they want to hype, you know. I mean, there's no doubt that Nintendo fans are Nintendo fans for a reason. We're not Nintendo fans because of friggin' Madden, you know what I mean? We are fans for Nintendo, or for Mario and for Zelda and stuff like that, so we do want to see things like that. But yeah, as usual, that stuff's probably going to be in video form, I would think. And then, because they tend to have their own conferences and stuff, and their own little, you know, events where they show these things off. It's just kind of how they roll. So, so anyway, but that would just be nice. I think it's important for them to have demos.
You know, so I just want to interject one crazy thought that just occurred to me. So you know how New Super Mario Bros. 2 is coming out in August, right? Mm-hmm. And then people are getting worried that this New Super Mario Bros. Me is like coming out too soon in relation to that. Is there any pie in the sky hope? Do you think there could possibly be some sort of connectivity between those two, and that could be a reason why they are coming out so close to each other?
I can see them doing that, but I don't currently understand what benefit there would be to have connectivity.
Mm.
Like, I don't see what I'd get out of it.
Okay.
Like, if I was to imagine right now me connecting Super Mario Land 3 or 3D Land with New Super Mario Bros. Wii, both great games that I love, but what would change?
Let's take this crazy example just for... take an example, like, you remember for Sword on GameCube, you know, there was some... when you were getting into an area, it would display on the 3DS screen. Mm-hmm. Maybe there would be, like, some extra area that would be available only through you having the game on your 3DS. If you've been playing, like, you know, take the 3DS as a controller for New Super Mario Bros. Me, let's say. And there were pipes you could only enter or door you could only enter if you had the other game. But it's very an un-Nintendo way of doing stuff.
Yeah, I never bought into that sort of thing. Like, even though I have a 3DS, and I would be just fine with that, like, in terms of being able to do stuff. But it always seemed limiting. Like, like neener, neener, neener. You know, if you have it, then cool, but look what you miss out on. It's something irrelevant. You know, because they can't... They risk pissing off customers if they actually made it anything actually cool, you know? People would be crying foul so loudly and so quickly, so...
Well, and what if New Super Mario Bros. Me actually just was a console version of New Super Mario Bros. 2? And you could... It was just absolutely online multiplayer. Yeah.
I wouldn't buy that.
No, I wouldn't either.
Not
I mean,
cool.
No, I don't think they would want to do that. Because I think they're happy keeping their handheld and their console stuff separate.
I'm kind of sort of expecting, you know, I would like, even if they bring that game, I would like to see some change in the style, you know. A New Super Mario is getting pretty old, you know. It's always exactly the same style. Give me something like, I don't know, cel shading or... something more distorted or something, you know, some graphical difference that makes New Super Mario Bros. Me a game that stand out a bit in the series, at least visually or via the soundtrack or something.
I want to see a Super Mario World type Mario game, whether this is on the 3DS or not, or the Wii, but I want to see that type of game with, like, Oreoto type art. Like, just very clean, smooth looking animation and almost like Wario Land Shake It, but obviously a lot less, like, actually cartoony.
More Paper Mario, maybe?
Yeah, like, maybe a little more Paper Mario, with maybe like Braid, kind of, but not with the controls of Braid, but, like, how that... Braid is a very nice-looking game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I would love to see that kind of thing. But I also... This is... Okay, here's... This is, like, part five of... Even though it's the third one I've said, but it'd be really cool to see a 2D Zelda for, like, the handheld that actually... was like the old Zeldas. I think there's if you limit yourself to a 2D space, you can see this in Mario games as well as anything
more
else.
More jam-packed.
They're jam-packed by nature, but just it's a different beast. When you open that third dimension, you open up a whole slew of new problems of how to block you.
Well, you also limit what you're seeing, you know, with a...
Right.
A Zelda game with an overview, you can view a much larger space. Instead, with Ocarina of Time, you're only seeing a small fraction in front of you. You have to move the camera to look around. I can see what you're seeing right now.
Yeah. So, okay, like, we pretty much did run out of time. So we won't get into our, or what we like in the past and everything. So two more things, though, I wanted to say about our hopes for E3 is, you know, this whole pedometer thing that they're talking about to get, like, kind of like the
street the card.
Pass. Like a Street Pass type thing, but for your Wii.
Mm-hmm.
I want that very much so. And I don't Street Pass much, but I think that Street Passing is awesome when it happens, and I think that coin collecting is pretty cool. And I mean, if I can use my 3DS for it, great.
Yeah, if you buy an app or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, just if they gave me like one of those little Pokeball type things that came with Heart Gold.
Pokewalker.
Yeah, the Pokewalker. They gave me like a Nintendo version of that or a shaped whatever. I'd be all down with that. And, you know, anyone who's saying that it's too hard to hold that, 95% of them are just bitching to bitch.
What if it was just like a plastic Mario mustache and you just wear it?
That would be freaking awesome.
Or they put an handle on the Wii U just like the GameCube and you carry the console.
Hey!
You can use that to beat up your EV games. Employer.
Yeah.
Employee. But yeah, so I think that would be really cool. I would like to see the implementation of that. Maybe it'll be a vitality sensor that you link into your system and how many heartbeats you've had throughout the day. And then the last thing, this is a generic one, but I really want surprises. The worst E3s are the ones where we either A, know everything, or B, Nintendo surprises are actually pretty lackluster. Like, I want them to really take effort to surprise us, like they did with Brawl and a billion other examples. It's getting late. I can't think of too many more. But, Mario Galaxy 2 was a huge surprise. And I really, really was psyched for that. And I think that was the same E3 as Golden Sun Dark Dawn.
Yes, it was.
It blew my effing mind because I wanted a sequel to that series so bad. Unfortunately, I felt like it kind of fell short. I'm still playing through it slowly, but still, I want my jaw to drop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's possible even sitting at my computer after work.
I will never forget when Pit came flying across the screen in 2010.
Sorry to keep you waiting.
Yep. And I literally, probably for the first time ever, like not even just related to gaming, just related to any news, I literally started like squealing like a little girl.
I did too.
My wife, she was just kind of started laughing at me, but I mean, it was all worth it. I was just...
Well, yeah. When you get the video from the conference, you know, we can hear the people cheering when they see Pit, and he said, like, I was with them, you know, I was shivering. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah. That's cool. And it was beautiful the way they did it, because if I'm not mistaken, it was like Medusa came up first, right? And at first you're thinking, like, what game is...
And you aired
Medusa from...
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they orchestrated that beautifully, so
nailed it on the head.
Like once or twice a generation, Nintendo does that with stuff, and like their Zelda 64 commercial is an example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to see that again, Nintendo, because I know that they have the power and the magic.
Just wait until Ice Climber 2012 gets announced.
I don't know. It'll be hardcore, and it'll be like they'll be all grotesque and steroid pumped, and they'll have these really badass axes with like double sides and.
Yeah, it's like Grand Theft Auto or something like that.
There'll be blood and fur around their hoods.
They'll just be, like, made of ice. And they won't actually be on a mountain. They'll just be made of ice, and it'll be a first-person shooter.
They'll be made of ice, it's on a mountain, it's in hell, and they're trying to climb up before they melt.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's
epic. Pitch it.
Anyway, but, we could do an entire podcast on E3, so... But we kind of ran out of time here, which is okay. Mm-hmm. We had some great discussions.
Yep.
So, you know, on that note, we really, as usual, would like you guys to comment on negativeworld.org and, you know, talk to us in the thread, create an account if you'd like. We'd really encourage that as well, especially with E3 coming up.
Join up.
Now, I mean, both of you actually haven't been here for more than a year, right?
Nope.
I've joined on January, I think.
So you guys are about to experience your first Negative World E3, and it will blow your mind.
Awesome.
You need an explosion sound effect. You got to edit that in. All
right. I'm just going to put all of ours together into one. No, but it is fun. And I mean, I think the boards are pretty steady throughout the year, but it will go nuts come E3 week. So... And we're all going to have a lot of fun. And it really is genuinely fun to be a part of the Negative World community and to discuss it as it happens live and everything. So, definitely, you know, come join us on negativeworld.org. And if you don't want to, well, there's always Facebook. You can find us if you search for negativeworld.org on there. And then there's also Twitter, which we're actually having more people kind of work on that. So you should be seeing more tweets from us, I would think, soon. And that is @negative_world. And one thing I'll say too, you should expect an enhanced podcast of this. I know that my last episode did not have one. That's because my software has been glitching up for that, and I don't yet have a solution, and I don't know if I'll actually go back and make one for the other episode. I apologize. But we still plan on doing those, so do not think that, you know, it's just something that Guillaume was doing for the time being. So expect that, you know, subscribe to that if you'd like, or you can stick with the standard one. Thank you, Joe and David. This was a lot of fun. I think we had some really great discussions tonight.
Yep. Absolutely.
And,
thanks for having us.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was a great way to end my evening and relax on a Friday night. And so yeah, thanks for your time and hearing on the boards, as I say. And yeah, so we'll see everyone else in probably 2 weeks.
Yep.
Later.
See ya.
Kids, the characters in The Lion King for the Super Nintendo have attitude. But if they're having too much attitude, then here's a cheat code to help you take them down a notch. Go to the options menu and type in B-A-R-R-Y to unlock a super secret menu which even contains a level select. So that's typing Barry in the options, man. So good luck on your safari adventure, and keep rockin'!